Jane Poole Wilson, you've of course been a member of the Legislative Council, and it will be considered, I suppose, controversial by some that you've continued in LegCo after declaring as a candidate in Middle. Why did you choose to do that?
Well, I think because I've got continuing roles as a member of the Legislative Council, and I've got particular roles in government. I sit on a couple of statutory boards. I'm the Equality Champion. I'm part of the Climate Change Transformation Board. And all of those roles continue very much in the same way as sitting MHKs until such time as I'm replaced in those roles. So obviously I have to continue to perform those responsibilities.
Now, on a personal level, you went to Ballochmeens High School before gaining a degree at Oxford. You have a professional background in employment law. That would, on the surface, seem a good grounding for dealing with legislative matters.
Yes, and I've felt my professional background and my skills have really stood me in good stead in the work I've been doing so far. I recognise that it's not necessarily publicly the most exciting thing maybe or the most visible thing, but I have, and colleagues will attest to this, put in a lot of time and effort looking at our laws, both to look at the detail of them and try and make sure they're as good as they can be. And I've also been privileged to work with a couple of MHKs on their private members bill. And one in particular, I was really pleased to work with Daphne Kane, bringing forward the Divorce, Dissolution and Separation Act, which paves the way for no-fault divorce in the Isle of Man.
And of course, that brings us to the subject of women in the House of Keys. Presumably, you'd like to see more.
Well, I think we are a really small parliament, and I know we're a small island, but I think in our parliament, it is important that we do try and represent our population. And I think, you know, that diversity of thought and experience and background, it is a really big part of that.
Now, this is your first attempt to gain a seat in the House of Keys. In some respects, your political career, I suppose, could be seen as back to front, LegCo, then the House of Keys. What's the driving force behind your bid to now get a seat in the Keys?
Well, I was really happy to join Legislative Council. It's been an absolute privilege. And I went into it understanding that Legislative Council was the second chamber, the revising chamber, and has a big part to play, actually, in scrutiny. And that includes scrutiny of policy. However, there is a line, I think, for members of Legislative Council that we are conscious of when it comes to how much we're driving or seen to be driving policy. And I completely recognise that if you want to contribute to the fullest possible extent, it is preferable, and I know a number of people feel this way, it's preferable that you have the public mandate by way of a direct vote.
Now, you've been an active member of the Legislative Council, but looking ahead, how do you see its future structure? Do you think it needs to be reformed?
I think we've actually done an amazing amount in the last few years, actually. I mean, I was completely up for the fact that Legislative Council was seen perhaps, and you know, perhaps unfairly. I mean, it's not really for me to comment, but it was certainly seen as perhaps not adding value, and people were asking questions about what its contribution was. And actually, I've been really pleased to play a part in demonstrating that value. And it is about the active contribution to legislative scrutiny. It is about the active contribution to our policy review committees in Tynwald, which I think, I hope the public anyway, are seeing as an increasingly important part of how parliamentary work can really add value. And also, I hope and I think that government might be starting to see that, you know, good scrutiny, good, constructive, evidence-based, considered scrutiny really can contribute to better outcomes, to better policy formation. So I actually think the Legislative Council, I mean, you know, let's be very clear, there's always opportunity for improvement and reform. I would never say just settle where you are. But I think we've made a lot of progress. And I think if we can carry on showing that real value and input, constructive input, then I think absolutely Legislative Council has a significant role to play.
Do you think they should be popularly elected?
Well, I think this is really difficult. And I remember looking at the Liz Vane review when that came out. And the difficulty is, on the one hand, it is attractive to have that popular mandate. On the other hand, how would you structure that? Because if you were to run an all-Ireland vote, and Liz Vane made this point, you would potentially set up a tension then, because you would have members of the Legislative Council who could argue they've got a stronger popular mandate than members of the Keys. So do you actually set up an unhealthy tension then about who has primacy? And at the moment, it is absolutely clear that the Keys have primacy. Legislative Council operates very well as a think again, pause mechanism, but the Keys retains primacy. And I think in any reform of how people are elected to the Legislative Council, you have to be very mindful of what the balance would end up being then.
What would you say are your priorities should you be elected by the voters of Middle?
Well, I think very, very important is our access to health services, and I absolutely include mental health in that. I think it is great that we are recognising increasingly and have done some important recognition of how significant our mental well-being is and the importance of being able to help people maintain and improve their mental health. So I'm very keen to see the Sir Jonathan Michael transformation work really continue and deliver that better access to health services and including mental health. I think it is so important that we get our economic strength and development right, because that's the foundation for anything we want to do, particularly in terms of supporting better delivery of public services. Climate change for me is an important issue, and talking to people as I've been out and about, people do feel that we must get this right. And I think we are very fortunate here in the Isle of Man that the way in which we approach this, we can absolutely leverage the opportunities for the island in terms of, I think, economic opportunities. But we also must do it in a way that leaves no one behind. And I think the other big thing for me is making sure that government is effective as it can be, accountable, and that we absolutely strive to deliver value for money, because we have to live within our means and we must not waste. We must ensure that what we are doing is the right thing to be doing, and to ensure we do it in a way that delivers value for money.
How achievable, though, are the climate change objectives without disproportionately hitting the less well off?
Well, I think that's very much to do with how we target support. So Tynwald, in its last sitting, passed a green grant scheme, which I regard as very much a start, by no means the end. And it is formulated at the moment on the basis of a grant, and assumes that people that will access that do have some money of their own. But I think we have to recognise that there are going to be people who do not have any money to apply themselves. So I think we do have to look at how we support those who really are the most vulnerable. And I think for others who are able to take some initiative themselves, but perhaps, again, don't have ready money available, or they've got it saved for another important purpose, I think we have to look at how we can make loan facilities available. But I think critically, we have to look at the co-benefits of doing this well. And, you know, for our most vulnerable people, if we can help them get this right, then we should see better outcomes in terms of quality of accommodation, which is better then for people's health and overall well-being.
Now, you've lived in Glenvine, I think, for 15 years or so. What are the issues for your area in particular, would you say?
Well, talking to people as I've been out and about, I think a lot of things that people are concerned about are things that will probably concern people island-wide. So things like health, things like the economy, things like climate change. But I suppose the particular things that I've heard for Middle would be around the community and the environment. So I think there is a strong sense of valuing the landscape and the environment, and not wanting to see that concreted over, for want of a better word. And I think the other issue that I'm hearing quite a lot about is traffic volumes, but also speed. I think they would resonate with people in other parts of the island as well, but they are issues for Middle residents.
One of the topics you've mentioned prior to the interview was students returning to the Isle of Man. It's something you want to encourage. I suppose the question is, why should they? Is it not a school of thought that they should maybe make their own way in the world at elsewhere before they come back to the Isle of Man and return maybe with greater life skills?
I think that is a valid school of thought, and I'd be a bit of a hypocrite if I said otherwise, because that's exactly what I did. And I think we have to recognise as well that for some people, their career choice is such that they may not view that they have as many options on the island. But I also think there would be people who are interested in returning here. And I think there's no doubt that we have huge opportunities, particularly in terms of tech and the digital world, and I think also in terms of our response to climate change, to offer interesting and worthwhile career paths on the Isle of Man. So I think we have to ask ourselves, if the job opportunities, interesting opportunities are there, what else would encourage people to actually come and make their career on the island?
Now, you have two children. What concerns for their future do you have, given the island's current trajectory?
Yeah, I think as far as they're concerned, I mean, I want them to. I think one of the important things that we've had on the island, and we still do have, is we have a very safe island. But reading the Chief Constable's latest report, and certainly my work with St Christopher's Isle of Man, I am aware that we do face an increased concern around exploitation of young people, particularly vulnerable young people. And I absolutely want to know that our young people can grow up in a safe environment, and that we can manage this concern, this safeguarding concern around the vulnerability of exploitation and risk.
Another topic was public transport. What is the problem with it on the island as you see it?
I think it is. I like to use our local bus services, and I think it works at the moment when you're sort of going from A to B, without necessarily needing to, when it's a direct route. So I think one of the things for people who are juggling all the aspects of busy lives, whether that's children, shopping, work, care for other family members, all the different things that people have to fit in day to day, I think our size and our public transport network is such that it doesn't easily work. I mean, I lived in London for a long time, and it's easy to hop on a bus and hop on a tube whenever it suits you and connect quite easily between destinations. I think that's one of our challenges, is that difficulty of meeting that flexibility of need and frequency of need.
We've heard it earlier from Treasury Minister this week, the former Treasury Minister Eddie Teer, who was critical of government spending over the past 5 years. He pointed to a significant increase in the government's workforce also. Do you think they've been profligate with the public purse?
I think most of these things are much more difficult than we recognise, actually. I mean, if you think we are a small island, but we are our own jurisdiction, and we are therefore trying to do the same number of things that larger jurisdictions do, many of which are, you know, complex and necessary, whether that's financial crime, regulation in the financial services and gambling sector, dealing with Brexit, dealing with climate change, dealing with health and social care. So I think first and foremost, we should recognise that we do have a lot to do, we need to be able to do it. I think the question, though, is how do you do that effectively and in a value for money driven way? And I don't think we're very good at that. So I think our danger is that we simply add without that root and branch consideration of, well, actually, all these things we do we still need to do them? Could they be done in a better way, a more effective, efficient way? And therefore, could we use our resource more effectively and efficiently? And that's what I mean about value for money.
In your political career to date, what would you say you're most proud of?
Oh, gosh. I've been so privileged to do so many things. I'm very proud of the work I've done legislatively, which I recognise is not what floats everyone's boat, but I'm very proud to have worked alongside Daphne Kane and Laurie Hooper to bring forward private members' bills. I think really do have the potential to make a difference to people's lives. I'm really proud of the work I've been privileged to be involved in as equality champion. We do have now a good legislative and code of practice and guidance framework in place, but there is much to do still to embed that. I've had the great privilege of chairing our Justice Committee, and I feel we have really contributed to making some meaningful change. We have got to a position where one of our ministers now in the portfolio includes justice, which I think is vital because there was no executive responsibility for that before. And that means that having given that executive responsibility, we now have somewhere to say, actually, come on, have a look at how well our legal services are provided, have a look at how effectively our justice system runs. So there have been many, many things that I've been proud of and where I think we've seen some good change. And I could probably go on, but I won't.
Now, you've served on many Tynwald committees, so you're well versed in procedures and protocol. Presumably, this would help you hit the ground running in the House of Keys. But do you think experience is important?
Yes, I do, because I know from my own experience and talking to colleagues that no matter how closely you follow Manx politics, once you get in and you start tackling the role, you do have to learn things. So it can take a bit of time to get to grips with everything. So experience is important. I do think so, yes.
How do you think government has handled the COVID crisis?
I think overall, I think it's obviously been an incredible challenge. And I think there has overall been a lot that's gone very, very well. I think, you know, the vaccination programme stands out as a really good example. I think we've also seen how government can pull together and work effectively to deliver quickly when necessary. You know, I know there have been problems. I was particularly concerned about the plight of returning residents when our borders were first closed. And I know that as we exit and move in, living with COVID and living with mitigation, there are strong views about what the right thing to do at any point is. And I particularly think we do need to focus still on a lot of mitigation because you know, the virus isn't going away as such. So we do have to proactively take responsible steps to mitigate while we live with the virus.
Now, you're standing as an independent. Were you ever attracted to any of the local political parties?
No, I one of the things I think is attractive about us not necessarily operating with a party political system here is, and it's something I've experienced personally in Tynwald, is the ability to understand a problem by reading about it, trying to analyse and understand the evidence, but also listen to informed debate. And you can sometimes start off having a view, but as you learn more about it, and particularly as you are informed by other people who are knowledgeable and have information and informed debate, you can actually change the view. And I feel that that's one of our strengths as a parliament, that people are not constrained by a sort of manifesto that's the party manifesto, that there is an opportunity to coalesce around a considered policy position once the evidence and the discussion has taken place.
And finally, if you were to sum up, why should voters put a cross next to the Poole Wilson name?
Because I care. I absolutely will work hard with passion, enthusiasm and integrity. And I will do my level best to help you to represent you.